today the unequal relationship between mortgage holders and their banks. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Robert. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Martin. How are you?
Good. Great to have you on the show. Now, let me just introduce you formally firstly, or you can do that yourself, because you've got a particular interest in this question of the relationship between banks and the mortgage holders.
Yeah, correct. So I've been assisting mortgage holders, I guess, for the last 10 years on the end where they gotten themselves into trouble with the bank. What I realized and experienced firsthand is there's a very strong unequal relationship between the two. And the odds are very much stacked in favor of the bank.
Funny that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the important thing to understand is that there has to be some balance between the roles and responsibilities of the bank versus the people who are borrowers, right? And actually, the playing field is horribly tipped in favor of the banks when you start the process of going for a mortgage and shopping around. I mean, the ACCC recently said it's very hard to get really transparent information about mortgage rates because of the way the mortgage rates work. But it's true through the life of the loan as well, and even more true, actually, should people get into some difficulty, you know, particularly perhaps when they are under mortgage stress or in financial pressure, because at that point, actually, things get even worse. So really across the life, it's true to say, I think that the relationship between the borrower and the bank is out of kilter.
Absolutely. Yep.
So let's start then with, so what are the rights and the obligations of the bank and also consumers?
Yeah, sure. So in regards to rights and obligation, well, let me just first say, in most cases, the borrower or the mortgage holder doesn't really know what their rights and rights are and the obligations of the bank. In regards to my work, there's probably two things that I always look at. So first of all, the borrower has to understand that if they get into financial stress, there's an obligation on the bank to provide financial hardship assistance.
Yep.
But that's the big one.
And we're just on that. That was brought in after the global financial crisis, wasn't it? Because previously there wasn't any formal process. So there is, but you have to actually reach for it, right?
Yeah.
The bank doesn't actually suddenly say, "Hey, I can see you're in difficulty. Let me help." So you've got to actually be prepared to admit that you've got issues, if you recognize you've got issues, and then there is a hardship program, although actually my own view is that hardship program is rather myopic in terms of the way that it actually deals with people.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So you really got to ask for it. And in my experience, if the mortgage holder goes directly to the bank, it's a bit of a reluctancy from the bank side to give it. That's why I often go down the path of external dispute resolution and consider going to the ombudsman. It just gives a bit more leverage from the borrower's side or the mortgage holder side. And the bank then has to follow through and actually honor their obligation.
And just to be clear, those obligations are about one, understanding where a particular household is with their financial position and their mortgage, and then essentially seeing what alternatives and options might be created. And so sometimes they will extend the life of the loan. They might suspend interest payments for a period of time or something like that. I have the view, though, that quite often those sorts of fixes aren't really fixes at all, right? They're not really actually tackling the underlying issue that's got into them a problem to start with.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's more of a temporary fix. Say mortgage holder, has an issue at a particular time. The bank then, in terms of resolution, hardship assistance, it's maybe giving a period of no repayment so the borrower can back on track, varying the loan, obviously. If the loan gets extended, just to reduce the monthly repayment. at the end of the day, the loan still has to be repaid. And then oftentimes in cases that I find as well is, even though we are in a very low interest rate environment, what I come across sometimes is just horrendous, like the amount of interest that a borrower is still paying.
Yep.
And oftentimes when I seek financial hardship for the borrower, it's actually a good opportunity to review what they're actually paying, and the bank might end up just adjusting it to bring it more to realistic.
Do you see evidence, because I see it in some of the people I speak with, that in fact when people get into difficulty, their interest rate goes up?
So oftentimes what happens, if it's a temporary relief at that financial hardship, end of the financial hardship period, it might end up that the bank adjusted, but the interest rate goes up, yeah.
That's cool. And just, you know, another question is, well, what are the obligations of the borrower? So if they are actually experiencing financial pressure, do they have an obligation to tell the bank or not?
That's a good question. I do think that, communication is obviously encouraged. And what the bank generally does, if the borrower falls behind, there's a process. So they try to get in touch with the borrower and different avenues, mail, email, phone calls, just to find out. But in my experience, and I guess it's come down to human nature, if we've got a problem, we tend to try to avoid it.
Australians, and there she'll be right, you know, the sun is generally shining, the beach looks pretty good, it'll be fine, my income will recover, and what I find quite often is that in my surveys, because I actually measure people's stress levels, financial stress levels, and also, you know, objectively and subjectively, so we ask them, do you feel you've actually got financial pressures? Quite often people don't realize they've got they've got issues, right? So they don't know enough about their cash flows, they don't know enough about their finances. So quite often, by the time it gets to the point where there's a problem, things have actually deteriorated quite quickly. And at that point, psychologically, it's quite hard for borrowers then to reach out to the lender to say, I've got a problem. So right at that early stage of when things are starting to go wrong, I think there's a really big gap in the conversation and the communication between the borrower and the bank.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing on communication, I would point out, the worst thing a borrower can do is do nothing, like not communicate with the bank, because that's pretty much an easy win for the bank. They just go through their proceedings as they have to, and the borrower just pretty much ends up losing the house without doing anything about it.
Well, let's then talk about this you know, difficult process. So when you've actually got to the point where there is a financial problem and you're falling behind with your payments, what are the potential outcomes that the borrower could expect at that point in practice?
Yep, sure. So like I said, so resolution agreement, talking about financial hardship, that is, varying the loan, adjusting the interest rates temporarily, or giving like a moratorium time of no repayments. That's a very, very common thing that I achieve. The other thing too, and I look at it in terms of obviously home loan lending is such a huge industry. And I always ask myself the questions, if something goes wrong, who is at fault? Is it the borrower or is it the bank? And in many cases, it's just, the bank has done the right thing and the borrower has fallen behind and maybe lost a job or something like that. And that's all fine. But the reality is I did come across a couple of cases as well where the borrower has fallen behind and reviewing the loan approval process, I think it was more a matter of the bank granting a loan unaffordable to start with, which is setting up the borrower, and that's just bad business. Unfortunately, that's the case as well.
And of course, if you go back to the Financial Services Royal Commission, you know, there was a whole bunch of evidence where people were effectively sold loans they should never have been sold in the first place. And there were some quite strong recommendations that came out of the back of that Royal Commission, of which almost none have actually been fully implemented. But it does, I think, cast this really important spotlight on the fact that in some cases people get loans they should never have got in the first place. And what happens is they don't go wrong on day one. It takes time for the problem to season and emerge. And certainly in my analysis, it can be years before it really comes to the surface. But there is still a question of, was that loan, quote, suitable, to use the jargon, or not, right? And in some cases, they weren't suitable.
Exactly. And I think from the banks, risk analysis or risk profiling and running different scenarios on the bank, they do that all the time. And I think there is something to be said about the bank looking at it, the equity position is really strong. We might turn a bit of a blind eye on the serviceability aspect of the borrower, because if the borrower does get in trouble, we're going to get our money back regardless, which to me is a bad business.
Well, of course, and the banks would argue that, well, prices always go up, so therefore we're going to create more equity. So therefore, it might be a bit of a problem in the first couple of years, but it should get easier. Except, of course, that currently at the moment, prices may not continue to rise, one side. And also the income pressure is quite substantial, because income growth in real terms is not growing and costs are. So, there's, I think, a very important argument for being a little more conservative in terms of the lending parameters. It's also worth noting, of course, that some months ago, the government tried to remove those responsible lending obligations on the banks too. In other words, putting more and more pressure back on the borrowers to basically say, well, if you want a loan, if you think you can, take it, then feel free to take it, right? So putting it all back on them. But going back to this unequal relationship, that would have been completely disastrous. And, the responsible lending obligations still exist there at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And to be fair, the responsible lending obligations, they are very loose in the first place. They're not very specific at all. And you really have to fight hard. And I did manage to get an outcome where the borrower was awarded the compensation, because it was proven that the bank shouldn't have given the loan in the first place. But even then, going through the ombudsman, the maximum penalty, you might call it, for the bank, going through the ombudsman, is that the bank has to take back the interest they charged. The loan amount still gets repaid. So it's still not a fair and reasonable outcome.
Well, the current replacement of the ombudsman actually is very weak in its ability to be able to do anything, right? As you say, it's got quite limited powers, and I think it's been almost set up as a sort of a bit of a fake in terms of its ability to really help people, unfortunately. And a lot of people will say, well, it's up to individuals, they should actually know what they're getting into. But when you actually stand back and read all the terms and conditions of the mortgage documents, which is still quite long and quite complicated, right? And when you actually understand that many people take a loan on the principle that if the bank has actually given them the loan, the bank must assume that they can afford to repay it, right? Which is a different risk scenario than perhaps people should think about. It's not too surprising that we end up often with this problem downstream. And then, of course, the question then becomes, well, is there a risk at some point in this process that you can actually lose control of the home that you've got if you start falling behind, and if you start finding that this process starts grinding forward?
I would like to really stress that point. Talking about if the borrower does nothing, there's a particular turning point in this process of the bank going after the borrower, and that is when it comes to legal proceedings, and the bank obtains an order of possession. At that point, the borrower lose total control of their home, and the only option they have is time to sell or refinance if they have any means to do that. And the most frustrating part for me is if I come across a case that I think has merits, that there could maybe be something of responsible lending issues. But once the bank has obtained an order of possession, those kind of things are off the table. It's just simply too late. And more these days, unfortunately, end up coming across those cases just a little bit too late. And so that means to the borrower, there's not even the opportunity to get any kind of compensation if the bank has done something wrong.
Well, certainly I see two behaviors from the banks. The first is that they have more informal conversations with the borrower, suggesting quietly in their ear they should sell, right, before they start any formal proceedings, because, formal proceedings cost and et cetera, right? But the second is that if they do start those formal proceedings, the duration over which they're prepared to sit and wait seems to me to be getting shorter and shorter. In other words, they want to get a resolution quicker, which suggests, therefore, that that window of opportunity to negotiate with the bank and try and actually find an alternative is actually becoming shorter and shorter, which means that more people end up ultimately being forced to sell and they lose control of their property, and ultimately the bank is the winner and the homeowner is the loser.
Yep. That's exactly the case. And most recently, what I experienced is the borrower saying, I wasn't even really informed that legal proceedings have commenced properly. And it, sometimes it's just the case, the bank just putting a letter in the letterbox saying you're invited to court. No further communication. And if the borrower has been quite, sitting back in the first place, and if they don't take up that opportunity to appear, the bank might end up getting out of possession very, very easily.
Just to be clear, in some cases, the first thing that the borrower knows is a letter from the bank, a formal letter.
Yeah.
How often does that happen in your experience?
It can be like the borrower might only be in arrears, not that much. There's a formal letter and it goes to court. And if the borrower doesn't show up in court, there might be an order of possession granted to the bank. That's pretty much the end of it.
Yeah. So once that process is triggered, it's very hard to untrigger it, right?
Yeah.
So it's really important then to be proactive and to, you know, engage with the bank appropriately. But then, of course, you've still got this unequal relationship, right? Because, you know, an individual may not have the legal experience, may not have the capability to be able to actually have the right conversations with the bank. So what do they do then? How do they actually get the help they need to be able to be able to have the right conversation with the bank at the right time?
Yeah. So my advice would be, first of all, be proactive about it. Communicate. Be aware that the bank has obligations. Financial hardship, there might be an opportunity to even look at responsible lending if that's the case. Be proactive about it, communicate. And also don't accept no for an answer. Just because you turn to the bank, want help, and they refuse, and that doesn't mean that the solution is off the table. So not accepting no for an answer would be a good advice from my side as well. Taking it further.
Yeah, and one of the observations is inside the banks, they have a formal complaints process, right? I quite often use that when I've got issues with the banks, because the frontline people, be they on the phone or in the branch, have very little leeway to do anything other than the formal process that's been defined, right? But my experience and my advice would be, if you're finding you're not getting the right answer from the bank, don't give up. Raise it as a formal complaint inside the bank first, because you've actually got to do that if you want to take external paths later. And that then forces somebody to look in more detail at the case, and you'll often end up with a specific case manager who will actually take more accountability and responsibility for it. But actually, a lot of people don't know about this internal dispute resolution process and don't know about the fact that you can raise a complaint internally in the bank.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so in the bank, like you rightly said, so there's an internal dispute resolution team, there's an external dispute resolution team, and you've got those avenues to go down.
And if you want to go external, you have actually to do the internal first, as I understand it.
Correct.
So the first question that the external dispute resolution people will ask is, well, did you raise a dispute internally? So therefore, you need to go through that process to be able to actually take it further. And as you say, don't take no for an answer. Just keep pushing and, you know, keep making a fuss. Because unfortunately, the truth is that those who make a fuss have a much greater chance of actually getting a better resolution at the end of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's my experience as well. Definitely. Not accepting open answer, and keep raising it. And if you don't get anywhere, consider external resolution.
So if I sort of stand back a little bit and say, so what's the most effective thing to do to make sure that you get a positive outcome in this situation where, in fact, you might be under financial pressure with your mortgage, or it might be, you know, a credit card debt or whatever? You know, what's the most positive thing to do? What's the steps you should take to make sure that you can actually get the outcome you want?
Yep. So in my experience, it's yeah, for me, external dispute resolution has given much better outcomes. Oftentimes when I get involved, the borrower has already tried internal dispute resolution and was refused. So turning to an ombudsman, in my experience, has been most successful, and especially before legal proceedings have commenced. Because yeah, the bank has the obligation, and there's a lot of opportunity to get a good outcome. And in many cases, the bank gives you an outcome that is not 100% satisfactory. I just raise another issue again, and just ask for a little bit more. Because I do know they have the obligation, and there is a lot of room to negotiate. Like I said before, the bank is fairly reluctant to give and honor their obligations in the first place. But if we know that, they have those obligations, you can push a bit harder and get to that. But yeah, my biggest advice is don't let it go to the point where legal proceeding have commenced and the bank has got an order of possession. It's just simply too late at that stage to get any good outcome.
Yeah, and just talking about your particular perspective, you know, that's driven because that's what you do. That, you know, you've basically got a business which essentially is trying to help people through this process.
Mm. Yep, and then the number one for me is start with information and knowledge. So yeah, I've set up a website and I've got a action guide that just points out a few things and hopefully points someone who is in that situation in the right direction. Because to me, it all starts with knowledge. The amount of time I come across someone, the first thing they say is, I just don't know what to do. I have no information. I don't know where to start. I don't know. I've never been in this situation. So the first thing would be starting with knowledge, understanding your rights and the bank's obligation, and then just trying to get the best outcome you can.
So where do people go to get that information?
Yeah, so I've got a website. It's called www.mortgageresolution.com.au. And we do offer that free mortgage resolution action guide in the hope that, it just points someone in need in the right direction. And I'm based in South Australia. So if you are in South Australia, I can certainly feel free to reach out and I can personally assist as well. And one other thing I would say, the risk to the borrower is fairly high if you are in financial stress. And I would just say a word of caution. There is companies and people out there that, in my view, try to take advantage. So getting help is great, but please, what I can say is do your own due diligence and find out whether the person that's trying to help you has your best interest at heart. Because oftentimes there might be people out there that try to offer short-term funding solutions for a problem that is created out of debt. So solving a problem with more debt, I don't think that's a great solution.
Now, that's a really important point. There are a number of, I would regard them as, very, very suspect organizations who claim to be able to solve people debt problems, and they'll quite often charge to do processes that there are no charges attached to, that they will actually do things like attach specific payments to income and frankly mess up people's finances a lot more and take fees for doing it. So they are not actually helpful in this situation. There are some debt counsellors, some of it run by charities and some run by the states across the country, and some of them actually can provide some really good advice. So it is important to be really cautious about where you get that advice from, because unfortunately a number of people that I've come across have got themselves into even deeper trouble thinking that they were actually solving the problem of their debt, but not actually not solving anything at all and just paying somebody else more in the process. And even things like debt restructuring and debt packaging and all those sorts of things, those solutions quite often lead to way worse outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. You summed it up really well. Yeah. That's exactly what I've seen as well.
Which is scary, really, when you think about it. And I guess the last point, as we come to the end of this conversation is, there is, of course, this fundamental question of money in, money out. You know, households have money coming in each month, households have money going out each month, right? One of my observations is that a lot of people really don't know too much about their finances. I mean, you know, they don't use necessarily apps to be able to look at where money is coming in, where money is going out. So it's almost a bit of a surprise when they discover that they've got this problem. To what extent do you think that better cash flow management and just spending a bit of time understanding what your money is going on and, you know, prioritizing more effectively can help people from getting into this, you know, rather important bear trap that's sitting there if you're not careful?
Yeah, I think it is crucial. I mean, we live in a time where it's all instant gratification, pay now, buy now, pay later, those kind of things. I think it's crucially important just to sit down and look at your finances and see how am I managing cash flow. Because the problem is once you fall behind, there's a penalty interest and it can escalate very, very quickly. Yep. And once you lose control of your finances, it can go downhill from there very quickly.
And of course, once things go off the rails, then the credit score gets worse, and that then puts more pressure on. If you were to take any other loans, the cost would be a lot higher. Meanwhile, the interest is compounding on interest. And so all of the quicksands effectively start pulling you in the same direction. So that's why it's important to be alert and aware of financial pressures, understand what your cash flows are. And ASIC has some very good tools and tips on the Smart Money website, by the way. I think those are pretty helpful in terms of understanding some of the basics. If you are actually seeing some financial pressures emerging, don't put your head in the sand. Don't assume that things will magically cure themselves. In the current environment, when incomes are not moving up as fast as costs, that's not going to solve it. And of course, we've now got the prospect of higher interest rates. And then if things start to go wrong, engage with the lender early, right? Use the formal processes that exist. But remember that the bank is always looking after their interests, not your interests. So it's very, very important that you go armed with the right information and the right positioning to be able to respond appropriately to the bank. Because at the end of the day, the only thing the bank is interested in is not taking a hit on that loan, and so that shapes the way they do things. And finally, the external resolution, as you say, if you use the external resolution right at the right point in time before the legal proceedings start, there is the prospect potentially of getting a good outcome. But that's a limited window of opportunity, which if you don't access at the right point in the cycle, as it were, you'll miss out. And the bottom line is this: if you do start falling behind, and your mortgage is actually not in good kilter in terms of its in payments, there is a real risk that you could lose your home. And of course, not only is that a financial pressure, but it's also a psychological and a personal pressure as well. And unfortunately, a lot of these things come together. So it's important to think about the financial aspect, not just from the finance point of view, but also from total well-being and from the total perspective of managing your life effectively.
Yeah, exactly. To the bank, it's a very limited penalty for the bank, but to the borrower, the effects. Yeah, I mean, it's not just the financial loss, the family breakups. Abuse and all just the ramifications that follow from there. Yeah, just detrimental. So.
Yeah, and all I say to people is, folks, when you think about taking that new mortgage, run some scenarios on what happens if rates go up, what happens if incomes get compressed, can I still manage to make those repayments? Because unfortunately, I'm still seeing too many people who are walking into these bear traps, thinking that magically the bank says it's fine, so it's going to be fine. And yet down the track, they get into this difficulty and then get on this treadmill and then try to escape and often refinance once or twice. But ultimately, they end up, in huge financial problems. And it's all because on day one, they were too aggressive. They believed too much the marketing spin from the banks rather than actually, what needed to be done. And, I always say to people, you've got to be confident in your own mind if you're making a financial commitment, particularly around a mortgage, that you can cope with it. Don't just rely on what the bank says, because the bank's only interested in protecting their risks, not protecting yours.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, Robert, I really appreciate your time today. I think that's been a very important conversation, a bit of a gloomy one on one level, but also some very important pointers there. We'll put the links below to your website. There is some really good resource there in terms of actually helping people think through these things. And appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Martin.
Same. Thanks. Here. Okay, bye-bye.